authorized to bid without providing confirmation for my buyer, Candy said. Believe me, you don't want to leave this much money on the table. Rene pursed his lips. He seemed to be wrestling with himself. Dex, he said at last, please bring Ms. V the encrypted sat phone.
Because your encryption procedures worked out so well last time, Evan said.
They did, Rene said. For me.
Dex crossed the ballroom and placed a bulky phone in Candy's hand. She winked at him, then dialed. As it rang, she tapped her boot, a smart-ass show of impatience. Abruptly, her expression hardened.
Confirmed, she said.
She listened for a time. Then she moved toward the Lexan door, wiggling the phone at Evan.
Someone wants to say hi.
One finger adorned with a metallic nail pressed the speaker button, and then a bizarre combination of voices poured forth.
Hello,
Evan.
It seems you have finally dug
yourself
a
hole
too
deep
to
climb
out
of.
Evan raised his eyebrows, an unspoken question for Candy. She read his face, gave a nod. When Evan thought of him, he always pictured the burly kid he'd known back at the Pride House group home. Now he felt the flicker of coldness that used to move through his chest when, as the smallest boy in the pack, he caught the ruthless focus of Charles Van Sciver. Evan cleared his throat.
I'm not buried yet.
No.
We will
be
paying
for
that
privilege.
I believe V wants
to
take
some
time
with
you
first.
That
will
be
my
gift
to
her
for
her
devoted
service.
It didn't have to go this way, Evan said.
It
is
what
it
is,
and
that's all
that
it
is.
Van Sciver's old standby. And also, judging from the dial tone emanating from the phone, his sign-off. Candy kept her gaze on Evan but held the phone behind her, raised over one shoulder. Orphan M came forward to claim it. He carried it back across to Rene.
You have tonight to consider your finances, Rene said. Bidding will begin in the morning.
Yeah.
Candy said, turning on one stiletto prong.
We're not willing to take that risk.
Renee's laugh was more like a stutter.
You don't have a choice.
Dex stiffened. Halbador readjusted his grip on the AK. Orphan M neared Renee and held out the phone. When Renee reached for it, M snatched David and spun him around, shoving the uncapped tip of a pen into his neck. Immediately, Halbador's AK-47 was pressed into Candy's temple. Dex had his handgun drawn, a 45 auto, and aimed at Orphan M, but the little man was barely visible behind David. From the safety of the Lexan vault, Evan watched the standoff. Calmly, Candy held up her hands, fluttered her fingers.
"Hear me out," she said. "I will offer you $100 million right now. We take him, and we're gone."
Rene's smile stretched across his tight face.
"Leaving me with a house full of furious psychopaths."
David's head was torqued back, his face flushed high at the cheekbones.
"Rene,"
he said, his voice throaty and cramped.
"I want to go home now."
All of his hipster cool had evaporated, and he looked like what he was. A college-age kid in over his head. The e-cigarette spun on the hardwood at his feet, and Evan couldn't help thinking the kid would never get the chance to graduate to Marlboro's. Em's fist flexed, the pen indenting the skin above David's carotid.
"Consider the boy," he said.
Renee's face shifted into something like disappointment.
"I have," he said.
He drew the handgun from his hip holster and shot David through the chest. David's hands pressed over the wound as he slid from M's grasp onto the floor. He stared up at Renee, mouth wavering while his life poured out between his fingers.
Dex, please show our high rollers to their room.
Renee holstered his gun.
Bidding will begin in the morning, he said again on his way out.
50. Making his preparations. Night. Evan crouched at the side of the bed in the surveillance camera's blind spot, making his preparations. He folded the plastic trash can liner over itself again and again, forming a 1-inch band of polyethylene. This time it would have to fit perfectly beneath the shock collar, hidden from view. He slid it between the contact points of the inner rim and his skin, then used his fingertips to tuck it in. If the slightest edge peeked up into view, his chance would be blown. And he'd wind up crucified, or skinned, or razor-bladed to pieces. And Alison Siegler would be delivered to the man who had purchased her from Hector Contrell, like a piece of exercise equipment. And the boy who'd called Evan would languish in his own private hell, trying the Rome Zone again and again, and again and again, getting no answer. Still crouching, Evan retrieved the piano wire from where he'd stashed it beneath the boot inside and crossed to the distressed leather chair that was bolted to the floor. He removed his socks and used them to wrap his hands, then slid the wire around one of the chair's wooden legs. He coiled either end of the wire around his padded hands and started sawing. Even through the cotton, the wire bit into his palms, but he kept at it. After about 5 minutes, he'd made a few centimeters of progress, but it was enough to give him some leverage. Firming his grip around the wire, he jammed it deep into the tiny notch and yanked down. It took 3 tries, but at last a wedge of wood chipped off the leg. He stopped to catch his breath and flex his aching hands. His feet were freezing, so he slid his socks back on. Then he picked up the wedge of wood, 8 inches long, 2 wide, a few centimeters thick. With some force, he was able to break it in half over his knee. Now he had 2 pieces that fit snugly in his fists when he curled his fingers around them. Handles. He looped either end of the piano wire around a chunk of wood, twisting it tight, testing it and testing it again until there was no give. A garrote. He wrapped it up tightly, slid it into his sock, and pulled down the leg of his jeans to cover the bulge. Then he pulled the spare pair of high-top hiking boots onto his lap, tugged free the laces, and fashioned them into a double-strand noose. This he stuffed in his front pocket on top of the Rome Zone. He'd have 1 shot at this, and 1 shot only. If a single thing went wrong, he'd spend his last agonizing minutes staring into the face of Charles Van Sciver. But for now, there was nothing more he could do. He dressed for morning and lay back on the bed. He let go of the grueling events of the day, tuned out his fears for tomorrow. There was only the present moment, his body on the soft, soft mattress, the faint sigh of his breath. If this proved to be his last night, then he wanted to enjoy every second. This time, when the gas came, he welcomed it. 51. A shout into the abyss. For once it was nice not to pretend. Candy didn't have to act like Ben Jaggers's wife, or his whore, or his partner in photojournalism. It was all out in the open. They were 2 deadly trained operatives, here to reclaim a government asset, and to permanently decommission him. Unfortunately, she still had to share a room with Jaggers. In other circumstances, it might have been romantic. Crackling fireplace, homey quilts thrown over matching queen beds, snowflakes clinging to the windows. It was like a friggin' Viagra commercial. She let her dress fall around her stiletto boots and stepped clear of it. Bending over, she unzipped her boots and tugged them off. She put on a pair of silk pajamas, the fabric a salve against her throbbing back. Not surprisingly, Jaggers didn't bother to turn around. He sat on the bed facing the sliding glass door. From behind, he looked frail and weak. His shoulders seemed bird-thin, and there was a slight hunch to his spine. He was the unlikeliest orphan she'd ever encountered. "What's your story?" she said. He still did not turn around.
"What story?"
"How did you get here? Become an orphan?"
"That information is classified. You know this."
"No shit. But it's me and you in a snowed-in chalet in the middle of God knows where-istan, and we can't fuck because you're lacking the requisite hardware. So I figure a little conversation might help us while away the hours."
At last he turned, but only enough to give her his profile. That drippy nose, the runny chin. He was a sight.
"If you continue to break protocol," he said, "I'll report you to Orphan Y."
"Van Sciver," she said, "has bigger concerns."
Now Jaggers faced her fully. Sitting on the mattress, he drew his knees to his chest. He looked scrawny, an embryonic vulture, and yet those eyes held his power. Flat and hard like river-smoothed stones, the eyes of a shark gliding effortlessly through the depths in search of prey. Those eyes told the truth. And the truth was that there was no story, no background to make sense of, because men like Ben Jaggers didn't make sense. They just were.
"As do we," he said. "We can't underestimate this man, Rene. He's impressive. You admire him."
"I admire what he did in that ballroom. How he took the winning cards right out of our hands. It was an intel failure on our part. We should have known what the man values and does not value."
"Maybe," Candy said, "he valued it all. He just valued some things over others." She studied his face, but it was like studying a dinner plate. She thought of him in that alley behind the old Crimean cannery, how when the girl had approached, he'd managed to shape his features into something human, into something requiring neighborly aid. "We could use a hand with the trunk. I think it got warped in the crash." Candy pictured the girl's one-shouldered shrug, Jaggers's claw-like hand slapped over her mouth, the slim silver pen jabbing at her neck, the wet thrashing against the closed trunk. She'd been beautiful, that girl. And it was a sin to destroy something beautiful. It struck Candy now that Jaggers had killed her not because it was prudent, as he'd claimed, but because he resented her beauty. He envied it. And he admired Renee not for the chess move of killing his young friend, but for the ruthlessness of the act. To destroy something you cannot be is to embrace your darkest heart, to yield to an ungodly desire. It is to be hijacked by what you aren't rather than nourished by what you are. Because what you are is nothing.
Van Sciver's mantra played in her head. "It is what it is, and that's all that it is." She heard it differently this time. Not as a hard-boiled directive, but as a shout into the abyss. Maybe ultimately that's all they were, her and M and Y. Untethered souls, parentless and brotherless, stripped of their humanity, forever echoing in the chasm. What had she seen in Orphan X's eyes when she'd revealed her mutilated back? Remorse? Whatever it was not what she'd expected. She'd devoted every waking minute to tracking him down, hell-bent on staring him in the face. Whatever she'd been hoping for, it certainly hadn't been the glimmer of empathy she'd spied in his eyes. She hated him all the more for it. Didn't she? Or had she seen in X
a reflection of what she herself had felt since her flesh had been defaced. The weakness of human emotion. Orphan M had said something. Candy blinked. What? He glanced at his watch. I said it's time to make contact. Clearing her throat, she went into the bathroom, where she removed a contact lens case from her toiletries bag. Leaning close to the mirror, she fingertipped a lens onto her right eyeball. The contact was a spherical curve of liquid crystal cells that projected high-def images. Invisible to all but the user, the lens created a virtual display several feet from the face. She fluttered her fingers, the metallic press-on nails catching the dim light. The radiofrequency identification-tagged fingernails allowed her to type in the air without a keyboard. Before hooding Candy and Jaggers and loading them in the private jet, Renee's men had searched their luggage compulsively for any communication devices. They had no way of knowing that Candy had been wearing her phone. She let her gaze loosen to focus on the floating display. It always took some time for the double-blind comms connection to initiate. The cursor blinked red, red, then finally turned green. Van Sciver's text scrolled before her face. Have you secured the asset? She lifted her fingers like a pianist and typed a reply text in thin air. Power play failed. We'll win him at auction tomorrow. She chewed her lip, waited nervously. I'm unwilling to take that risk. Okay. She took a deep breath, studied the bathroom walls. Where am I? Did you backtrace sat phone call? Remote location in Maine. Maine didn't make sense given their travel time. To throw off their estimates, Renee's men must have flown them back and forth in the jet before loading them into the helicopters. She waited, watched the blinking green cursor. After a moment, another text appeared. We got through the cryptographic ciphers on his sat phone, but we only had two satellites visible for the GPS trilateration. We're making timing corrections now, zeroing in on precise coordinates. Are you going to send a drone? Gets tricky over U.S. soil. She typed, we live for tricky. I'm taking no chances, Van Sciver texted. Which means? Boots on the ground. She pursed her lips. A physical raid backed by numbers? Van Sciver didn't operate this way. Ever. It would take a different level of coordination, logistics, mission planning, which meant time. Can you get here by morning? She typed. If not, he texted, you'd damn well better stall the auction. Copy that. There is no version in which Orphan X exits that building until I arrive. Understood? She took a breath. Understood. The cursor went from green to red. She lowered her hands. The display vanished, leaving her looking at her own reflection in the mirror. Her conscience, long buried and atrophied from lack of use, rolled over from its sleep. She kicked it in the face and put it back down. It had no business being awake for what she was about to do. 52. Some kind of advantage. Despite the drugs, Evan was awake and alert with the first light of dawn. He lay on his back, waiting. He sensed the planks compressing in the hall before he heard them creak. Dex could put some serious weight down on a floor. The deadbolts clanked open, one after another, and the hinges gave a soft complaint as the mahogany door swung inward. Evan rolled over, feigning sleep, his eyelids cracked enough to register Dex's massive shape entering the room. His cinder block fist raised the transmitter to aim at Evan,
and Evan reacted appropriately, jolting awake, shuddering on the sheets, clawing at his shock collar. It was, he thought, a convincing performance. He'd had plenty of practice.
Dex led him into the hall where Halbador waited, less lethal shotgun in hand. Not a word was exchanged as Evan headed to the stairs and wound his way down. Dead man walking.
When they reached the ground floor, Evan caught a whiff of espresso in the air, the distant murmur of chatter. The library was empty, but a few early risers had gathered in the sunroom, the guests being catered to, pampered like Sotheby's VIPs at a pre-auction reception. The great white Sark held forth by the banquet, swapping war stories with the others. The widow Lakshmi Narayanan sipped tea in a corner, sitting ramrod straight. Conversation ceased as Evan passed by, all those sets of eyes lifting to trace his path across the doorway. Candy McClure and Orphan M were conspicuously absent. Even if Van Sciver chose to deploy orphans in pairs these days, they were built to operate alone. Old habits were hard to break. It was tough to imagine them chewing biscotti with war criminals and drug lords. Evan kept on. He sensed Halbador's shotgun trained at the space between his shoulder blades. Dex kept several paces ahead of him, walking sideways to hold him in view, the pistol dwarfed by his hand. Their three-man procession was coming up on the ballroom now. Evan felt his skin tingle as it did before a mission kicked off. Not fear, no, nor even the stress of anticipation, but an overwhelming sense of his own aliveness. He hated to admit how much he loved this, especially given the horrors he would face if he failed. His vision sharpened until he could make out the knuckle grooves on Dex's trigger finger. He sensed the cadence of Halbador's footsteps, the vibrations through the marble floor. Reading the rhythm of the men's movements, he predicted and gauged and prepared. The makeshift garrote stuffed in his sock pressed coolly into his flesh. They turned the corner, their boots tapping the hardwood. The rows of empty chairs were set out neatly, as if in anticipation of a wedding service. The Lexan vault waited. They crossed the freshly polished spot on the floor where David had bled out. 10 more steps. Evan used the chirp of Halbador's boots against the floor to measure the man's distance behind him. He slipped a hand into his pocket, digging for his bootlaces, curling his fingers around one side of the improvised noose. 6 more steps. His muscles tensed. His cells sang. It would come down to instinct, timing, and luck. 4. The high-set windows threw Halbador's shadow forward next to Evan. He flicked his eyes over, reading the dark outline, noting the shotgun's position. Letting his right hand dangle, he gripped his jeans at the thigh and gave a little tug, the pant leg riding up a few inches, putting the garrote within reach. Dex cast a last glance back at Evan before pivoting, his hand starting to rise to the sensor panel beneath the big steel handle of the Lexan door. 2 steps. 1. The fine hairs on Dex's arm glistened in the morning light. His big hand spread, that tattooed grimace growing even broader, the blood-dripping canines coming clear. Everything moved in slow motion, as if Evan were again living inside that single drop from Renee's syringe. Dex's giant palm touched the panel. The inset screen flared to life, reading the roadmap of veins beneath the skin. Match. The lugs released. The foot-thick door swung open. 3 inches. 6. 1 foot. Dex's hand was still raised, the flared fingers starting to retract. Evan yanked the bootlace noose from his pocket. He stepped not for Dex, but past him, lunging for the widening gap in the door. As he skimmed by Dex's shoulder, he lassoed the still-raised hand. Halbador shouted, the shotgun aimed, but Evan had already put Dex between himself and the barrel. Dex wheeled, disoriented by the fact that Evan was fleeing into the Lexan room instead of away from it. Dex was spinning in one direction, Evan in the other. With his free hand, Evan grabbed for the 45 and missed. For an instant, he tumbled toward the Lexan vault, his left hand gripping the end of the bootlaces, his right flailing. Then the slack came out of the laces. The noose cinched around Dex's wrist. His arm snapped straight. Evan held on with everything he had. His momentum carried him past the razor-sharp edge of the doorway, across the threshold, into the vault. He seized the inside door handle and slammed the bulky door shut as hard as he could. It hammered Dex above the junction of his wrist, nearly cleaving the arm in two. Dex's mouth stretched wide, his lips wavering. It was really strange to see a man scream and not make a sound. Evan put all his weight against the handle, pinning Dex's arm. He'd released the noose, but the knot held, the laces embedded in the flesh at the base of Dex's hand a few inches below the massive wound, holding the blood in the veins. Now, he just had to remove the hand. Keeping his grip on the door handle, Evan ripped the garrote free of his sock. Dex reared back, the weighty door swinging open, then smashing shut again on the hatchet wound of the wrist. His mouth spread in another silent roar, but by then Evan had already looped the piano wire around the arm, sinking it into the deepening gash above the wrist. Gripping the roughly hewn wooden handles, Evan twisted the garrote. Ligaments snapped. The bones of the wrist started to separate from the base of the ulna and radius. It was grisly, hard-going work. Evan sensed a blur of movement overhead, found himself looking up into the barrel of the 45. He jerked his face to the side as Dex pulled the trigger, the percussion so loud that for a moment Evan thought the round had in fact penetrated his head. But he heard it ping behind him, and then again and again, ricocheting endlessly around the small box. It seemed only a matter of time before the bullet would find him. Evan was dangling from the garrote's handles, wrenching with all his might, yanking Dex against the door to hold it shut. Dex shoved himself back, trying to widen the gap and position himself for another shot. And still the round pinged and pinged. Halbador gripped Dex around the midsection, fighting a tug-of-war over the mangled arm. Dex jammed the gun through the gap again, and Evan clustered both ends of the garrote in one hand and grabbed for the barrel with the other, forcing the bore to the side of his head. The gun bucked powerfully. He felt the ache in the bones of his fingers, but didn't fire. He squeezed the slide assembly even tighter, keeping the pistol from cycling. As long as he held on, it wouldn't be able to eject the round it had already fired. Torquing his wrist, he managed to wrench the 45 free of Dex's grip. The pistol skittered across the Lexan floor behind him. The first shot was still rocketing around the enclosure, whining and cracking off the walls. He felt the air move, the bullet riffling the hair on his head, missing by a whisper. The world was nothing but the ringing aftermath of a struck bell. His head felt thick and dead, stuffed with rags. Dex reared back again, Halbador yanking him, the door yawning wide. Evan's fists ached around the wooden handles. His boots slipped on the slick Lexan. Dex and Halbador were going to rip him right out of the box. He lost his feet, swinging around on his ass, pulled by the garrote toward the threshold. At the last minute, he threw a boot wide, wedging it against the doorframe, and hurled himself back. The tendons snapped audibly. Evan toppled backward. The severed hand fell free, slapping the floor. Dex and Halbador cartwheeled away, Dex's stump flinging up, trailing crimson mist. Evan heard the bullet zing overhead, and then silence. It must have flown out the open door. He scrambled forward, reaching for the metal handle and slamming the thick door. Dex rolled on the floor, clutching his arm. Halbador crawled out from beneath him, transmitter in hand, trying in vain to electrify Evan's shock collar. Holding the door shut, Evan groped behind him for the severed hand. His fingers cupped Dex's. He gathered the hand in and slapped it against the sensor panel. It leaked blood, but the noose it held, still cinched around the base of the hand above the jagged line of the wrist. The sensor whirred and processed. Had the bootlaces held enough blood in the hand for the sensor to read the vein pattern? Halbador was on his feet now. The screen lit up. Reading. Reading. In his peripheral vision, Evan sensed bodies pouring through the doorway, backup arriving. Finally, command buttons littered the screen. Lock. Open. Disable. Recode. Evan thumbed recode. Halbador lunged for the handle. Evan spread his own hand on the panel. The screen flashed green, and the lugs engaged with a clang an instant before Halbador curled his hands around the handle. Halbador tore at the steel bar, his flailing locks spattering sweat across the Lexan. He stopped flailing. His shoulders sank. He and Evan stared at each other through the transparent door. Behind Halbador, Dex rose to his feet and aimed his muted screams at the elaborate chandelier. Bidders and guards sprinted into the ballroom, jostling and shouting and overturning chairs. At the head of the pack, Renee halted, the sole point of stillness in the room. His face was flushed in streaks along the lines of plastic surgeries past. A cold rage cemented his jaw. He glared at Evan, locked safely inside the Lexan vault. Removing his transmitter from a pocket inside his suit jacket, he aimed it at Evan and squeezed. Evan took a step back, picked up the .45, righted the folding chair, and sat. Renee squeezed the transmitter again, then hurled it aside. He charged across to the vault and tugged on the handle, his thin hair cascading over his forehead. Then he stopped, sweeping his bangs back into place. "So you've locked yourself in your own cell?" His voice, filtered through the panel, had a tinny quality. "You think that gives you some kind of advantage?" Evan leaned to pick up Dex's severed hand from the floor. The blood-dripping scowl inked on the skin was now augmented with the real thing. The alligator's skin below Renee's left eye twitched. A squiggle of a vein showed at his temple. "We still have you trapped." He coughed out a laugh that was equal parts fury and disbelief. "How exactly do you see this ending?" Evan lifted Dex's florid scowl and placed it over his mouth. 53. Some Delicacies. Confusion and mayhem roiled through the ballroom, catching like a flame. Sark had someone by the lapel. A Somalian warlord? His drawn-back fist restrained by one of the narcos. Dex staggered out, leaving a jagged trail of blood, another narco at his side. Candy and Orphan M had appeared. They alone looked composed, leaning against the grand piano in the rear of the room, a nightclub act between sets. Candy caught Evan's eye, and she grinned. Behind her beautiful teeth, there was hunger. Renee gestured frantically for the guards to get everyone under control. Evan sat calmly on his chair, watching the show. As the commotion built to a crescendo, Halbador swapped out his less lethal shotgun for an AK-47. Standing on a chair, he swept the barrel across the crowd. "Cállense!" he shouted. "Shut up!" It took some prodding from the other narcos, but at last a version of order had been restored.
I can sell him box and all, Rene said, addressing the crowd of bidders. You can buy him and starve him to death like a lizard in a jar. Savor every minute.
This is not our agreement, Sark said. I want it to be worse than this for him. I want access to his soft flesh.
The widow Lakshmi Narayanan made a throaty sound of agreement. The others voiced their displeasure.
He has a gun, the Somalian said.
He's locked inside a bulletproof box, Rene said.
What if he so much as opens that door, he'll be looking straight down the barrel of an AK-47.
Evan made eye contact with Candy in the back of the ballroom. Though we couldn't be sure from this distance, it seemed she was enjoying herself almost as much as he was. The clamor grew, and Rene waded into the group to make assurances. A debate raged over what to do. No simple solution was forthcoming. Evan had taken Rene's biggest strength, his ingenuity, and turned it against him. Lexan is bullet-resistant, impact-resistant, heat-resistant up to 212 degrees, and cold-resistant down to 40 below. And that's at normal thickness. The vault walls were a solid foot deep. Rene had thought he was building Evan a cage, but he'd made him a suit of armor. Evan relaxed in his chair. He wouldn't be going anywhere anytime soon, and the customers were growing increasingly displeased.
Sarin nerve gas through the rear vent, the Serbian was recommending.
How does that get him in hand? Sark said. We must hire a crane, drop this box from a great height and shatter him free.
The Hong Kong gangster's translator was working overtime to keep his employer in the conversation.
Get the entire unit offshore, on one of our crude oil tankers. We can slide him off into the sea and watch him sink.
A chorus of protests went up, the argument threatening to explode into violence. At last, Asim pulled Rene aside. They quietly conducted a more serious discussion at the fringe of the chairs. When they were done, Rene signaled to Halbador, who quieted the scrum once again.
We have a solution, Rene said.
Sark's glaucomic eyes found a sudden focus.
Which is?
Breaching the vault, Asim said.
At this, Candy stepped forward, interested at last. Em hung behind her, his eyes level with her shoulder, observing the scene quietly.
Mr. Al-Hakim and I were just discussing the risk of damaging the goods, Rene said. We'd hate for the overpressure from the charge to pancake the nowhere man's vital organs.
Yes, Sark said, that would be a shame.
Fortunately, I have quite a bit of experience, Asim said.
Blowing shit up, Sark said. This is not breaching.
Asim raised a shaking hand and smoothed his wispy mustache.
Al-Mansura, Yemen, 2010. Bucheli, Colombia, 2011. Gombe, Nigeria, 2012. Taji, Iraq, 2013.
What are these?
Prisons, Candy said, her grin growing broader. Jails, detention facilities.
She turned to address the group. The good news is that this piece of shit has busted through perimeter walls, cells, and dungeons on three continents.
Four, Asim said. Edmonton Mac Security Institution.
A wan smile.
Last month.
Rene turned, casting his brown gaze at Evan.
You have to get him out alive. I could blast a sardine out of a tin without snapping a slender little bone. Believe me.
Asim smiled,
showing his broken front teeth.
I want him alive more than you do.
Do you have explosives on the premises? Candy asked. Dex is being choppered out from medical attention as we speak, Renee said. My exceedingly discreet transport team will deliver whatever Mr. Al-Hakim requires within a few hours.
Take your time.
Candy looked across at Evan and ran her tongue along her lips.
Some delicacies are worth waiting for.
Where are you? En route with the team, confirming coordinates, but we look to be less than an hour out. Vault about to be breached, then auction will commence. Stall it. Win the auction. Orphan X is not to leave premises until I arrive. Hurry. The air tasted recycled. Evan tucked the edges of the plastic trash liner into the shock collar, making sure the buffer hadn't slid out of place. He could hear his breaths off the Lexan walls, vibrating his eardrums, and inside a snare drum effect. The folding chair pressed hard and cold into his lower back. The bidders milled about, their focus directed at him in passing, as if he were a fish tank in a crowded lobby. So many of his enemies were right in this very room, and yet they constituted only a fraction of those who wanted him dead. With some fanfare, the explosives arrived at last, a wooden shipping crate stickered with a hazmat logo and carted in by three narcos. Asim directed them to place the crate in the back of the ballroom, behind the rows of folding chairs. His motor skills might have deteriorated, but at the sight of the explosives, he snapped into his body differently, all simmering intensity and curt directives. Again Candy and Evan locked eyes across the rows of chairs. She pursed her lips, let them pop open. A goodbye kiss. This time Evan actually found himself smiling back. After assessing the crate, Asim walked over to the Lexan vault and measured the door, a pencil protruding from his lips. He ignored Evan, focused only on the task. Then he walked back to the crate and ordered the men to unload it. They lifted out a spool of 100-grain detonating cord, thin plastic tubing packed with pentaerythritol tetranitrate. Det cord explodes at 4 miles a second, giving the effect of simultaneous detonation. A linear precision cutting charge, it can be wrapped around a concrete pylon or contoured to any outline of choice. The best bet in the world of explosives to get that wily coyote-shaped hole-in-a-wall effect. It is ideal for rock carving work, building demolition, dock pile removal. But it is best for breaching. Before Asim was done, it would knock the Lexan door off its hinges and Evan off his feet, leaving him exposed to a firing squad of AK-47s. The explosives and gunpowder amassed in the ballroom could take out a small militia group. Evan had a handgun. To be precise, he had 6 bullets in a Kimber 45. Given what he was facing, it wasn't much of a weapon. He heard Jack, perennial teacher and father, laughing at him from beyond the grave. "That Kimber's not your weapon. You are the weapon, and your fingers the safety." As a child, as an operator in high threat zones, as an imposter in the ordinary life world of Castle Heights, he moved alone. For as long as he could remember, loneliness had been his companion. But never had he felt as isolated as he did now, locked in a transparent box, surrounded by people competing for the right to slaughter him. He wished Jack were here. Over the years, he felt Jack's absence acutely, as loss, as guilt, as remorse. But not like this. Right now, he missed Jack himself.
Jack of the baseball catcher build, Jack of the world-class squint, the well-grooved crow's feet. Jack who always knew when to not say anything, when to just rest a hand on Evan's boy's skinny shoulder. Evan had been unwilling to admit to himself what a toll the last week and a half had taken. But now the rawness overtook him, threatening to divert his focus. He snapped himself back into line, reminded himself where he was and what was at stake. He was in a shark cage circled by great whites. The last thing he could afford right now was a stroll down memory lane. Jack was dead. It was up to Evan, and Evan alone. The bidders had settled in to wait not so patiently on the folding chairs, quarreling or sitting sullenly. Candy McClure and Orphan M were the only two not in the room. Evan wondered what plans they were hatching in private. As much for show as for anything else, Renee kept one dedicated guard standing by the vault door, his AK trained on Evan. Back by the grand piano, a seam was on his knees, cutting precise lengths of debt cord off the spool. A ring of duct tape dangling from his mouth, Aseem walked back to the Lexan vault again. With shaking hands, he taped a length of debt cord along the hinge side of the door. He used smaller strips to augment the main charge. When he was done, he stood back to admire his work. For a moment, he and Evan faced each other through the Lexan.
"Ready to get yanked through the looking glass?"
Aseem tapped the Lexan.
"We're minutes away."
Evan felt his heart rate quicken, so he focused on his breathing. Right now there was nothing to do but inhale and exhale. Inhale and exhale. Heading back down the aisle toward the staging point in the rear of the ballroom, Aseem snapped his fingers. Two guards carried over a hefty olive-green ammo can. They moved cautiously, setting down the metal box with extreme care. Aseem unlatched the lid, smiled down at the contents. It took two men to lift out the initiation assembly. They did so gingerly. It was a factory-assembled unit, 50 feet of wasp-yellow non-electric shock tube wound around a coil, the blasting cap already crimped onto the end. Given that it was shock-sensitive, even a 4-foot drop onto the hardwood could set it off. The non-L shock tube, once unrolled and connected to the dent cord, would function like a fuse. From a healthy standoff, a seam would flip a lever, propagating the firing impulse through the shock tube snaking across the ballroom floor to the vault door. A fraction of a second later, Evan would be lying on his back inside the blasted open Lexan vault, bleeding from his ears. Sensing that a climax was near, the bidders vacated their chairs, gathering around a seam. Renee turned to Halbador. "Two of our guests are missing." One of the other narcos said, "They're resting in their room until the auction starts." "Get them," Renee said. Halbador nodded and started out. Renee turned back to the room. "Are we ready?" Aseem rose, his legs trembling from the exertion. He'd sweated through his shirt.
"Just have to connect the shock tube to the dent cord."
Sark elbowed his way through the cluster.
"What will you use to initiate?"
A faint whirring sound carried across the rows of empty chairs, and then a loud clank. The bidders turned as one. Evan lowered his palm from the inside panel, the vault door clicking open. He jabbed the door out, knocking the guard onto his ass, then swung it back to use as a shield. He peered from the slender gap. The Kimber 45 pointed.
"I have a suggestion," he said.
54. Bad Dogs. From there, it went fast.
Evan put his first bullet through Asim's shoulder, making the man tumble to the side and clearing the sightline to the initiation assembly. The toppled guard unleashed the AK at Evan, but the swung-open slab of the door deflected his fire, the rounds whining off the angled Lexan. Rene looked from Evan to Asim and back to Evan, his ruddy cheeks lighting with realization. Grabbing the widow Lakshmi Narayan Ansari, he flung her in front of the initiation assembly to block Evan's angle. Evan shot her through the back of the calf. She screeched and balled up as he'd hoped she would. The yellow shock tube and crimped blasting cap peeked into view above the crown of her head. Evan fired and missed, the bullet blowing out one of the legs of the piano. From the doorway, Halbador screamed orders at the remaining guards. Rene backpedaled in the surging crowd, grabbing Sark's jacket from behind and pivoting them both, putting the man's girth between him and the explosives. Evan fired at the assembly again, but the volley of bullets from the guard's AK drove the Lexan door into his arm, his shot sailing wide. The guard's flurry was punctuated with a click. The magazine finally run dry. Over by the doorway, Halbador picked up the slack, firing haphazardly. His rounds sprayed the Lexan wall, but Evan tuned him out. He aimed the 45. Two bullets left. The bidders stampeded for the exits, bodies and kicked-over chairs flickering across his field of vision. The blasting cap strobed in and out of view. Even in the mayhem, he found an inner calm. Inhale, exhale. Wait for the space between heartbeats. He let a final cool breath pass through his teeth. With steady, even pressure, he pulled the trigger. The bullet struck the cap at its union with the shock tube. The first explosion was instantaneous, the shock wave lifting Asim and the widow off the floor, their limbs spread, heads corkscrewing on broken necks. Evan withdrew behind the door into the vault, rushing to swing the hefty door shut after him. He wasn't worried about the initial explosion. He was worried about what was coming. The assembly was close enough to the giant spool of debt cord to propagate into a bigger boom. He didn't have to look up to know when it happened. The air told him. The molecules seemed to still as if drawing their breath, the stunned nanosecond of calm before the hurricane. And then everything let go. The blast hammered the vault door the remaining inches into the frame with enough force to knock Evan across the inside of the vault. He bowling-balled through the folding chair and racked up against the rear wall. Bright orange flame lit the world around him. It was as though he'd flown into the sun. Heat pulsed through the Lexan walls, the ceiling, even the floor. He couldn't see anything, and for a moment he worried that he'd underestimated the charge, that he was going to bring the whole goddamn chalet down on top of him. But a fresh wind suctioned off the flames and black smoke from all around him, the vault emerging from its sheath of fire. As the air started to clear, he looked up to see the massive chandelier plummeting down at him. By instinct, he covered his head. The chandelier shattered across the transparent roof into a million brilliant pieces, each facet lit with a yellow lick of flame. Bits of crystal tinkled across the hardwood. Bodies twitched. The entire rear wall of the chalet had blown out. Snow drifted in, swirling among the ash, settling across the piano and the corpses. A wartime tableau. His ears didn't ring so much as scream. His head hummed. The vault door had wobbled open again. Sprawled on his ass inside the Lexan box, Evan blinked, trying to draw the ballroom into full focus. The scene was biblical. They lay dead. All of them. The chairs had slid to the walls, many of them still upright. Through the gaping hole where the wall had been, Evan heard the Dobermans somewhere outside, barking and barking. Notes of terror mingled with their snarls. With a groan, he found his feet and lumbered out of the Lexan vault. The air carried the scent of sap and snow and burned flesh. Across the ballroom, Sark's charred body lay sprawled in a heap of others against the wall, his face and chest missing, as if scooped out. He'd almost made it to the kitchen. Impossibly. He wiggled. Evan stared with incredulity. Sark heaved upward, and for a moment Evan thought he was going to sit up stiffly, a B-movie vampire rising from his coffin. But then Renee squirmed out from beneath the wrecked corpse. He staggered a few steps and leaned heavily against the wall. Ash painted his forehead, and his cheeks looked raw. Evan stepped forward and raised the .45, and Renee swung his head heavily to face him. The two men stared at each other across the churning air of the ballroom. Renee lifted a hand, fingers splayed. "Let's..." Evan shot him in the chest. Renee slammed against the wall. Something fell from his pocket, bouncing over the jumbled bodies before coming to rest on the floor. A vial filled with a familiar, viscous, clear fluid. Renee let out a cry, his fingers clutching his ribcage. Muted sobs shuddered his shoulders. Then he straightened up. His hands fell away. In his palm, a flattened slug. Evan's head swam with impossibilities. Renee's vampiric experiments had made him bulletproof. But then logic kicked in. Images assembled slowly in his mind. The way Renee's jacket never wrinkled. How the fabric seemed to buckle rather than fold. The suit was bulletproof. Over the years, Evan had heard of civilian clothing built with the same carbon nanotubes used in flexible body armor. And now, he'd wasted his last bullet firing into an impenetrable navy plaid coat. Renee coughed, doubling over and clutching his ribs. He glanced at the vast opening blown through the rear wall a few feet away. Grimacing, he forced himself upright. Evan cast aside the empty kimber and advanced on him. Still holding his ribs, Renee hobbled for the hole. Evan had only taken his first step when he heard movement behind him. Halbador stumbled through the rear doorway. The explosion had blasted him right across the threshold into the hall. He looked ragged, dragging one foot. Blood crusted his earlobes, and he was making unintelligible noises. The Kalashnikov dangled around his shoulder from its strap. With an injured arm, he tried to tug the AK up to aim at Evan. The barrel lifted a few inches, firing into the floor past the tips of Halbador's boots. He struggled to support the gun with his other hand, to raise it higher and bring Evan into the sights. Evan halted in the middle of the ballroom, Halbador behind him, Renee ahead. Halbador managed to heft the gun closer to horizontal. The next burst chewed up the floorboards midway between him and Evan. The recoil knocked the AK from Halbador's hands. He clawed at it, drawing it up again from the strap. Instinct surged in Evan to go for Renee. But if he did, he'd be leaving himself exposed, and Halbador looked to be seconds away from steadying the AK. Wheezing, Renee reached the edge of the crumbled wall. He cast a panicked look back at Evan, and then slipped outside. Evan turned and ran for Halbador. Sweat greased the narco's face. Biting his lower lip, Halbador struggled to fight the gun back into position. His damaged arms couldn't sustain the weight. As Evan closed in, the muzzle came up crooked, firing wildly to the side. Evan kicked the gun free. Halbador charged him, coming over the top of him, beating at his back with bony elbows. Evan held him low around the waist in a football tackle, Halbador's big gold belt buckle grinding his cheek. Gathering his legs beneath him, Evan unhooked the belt and reared back. He kicked Halbador's hip while tearing at the buckle, spinning the guard into an off-kilter 180, a string pull top being launched. Before Halbador could reorient himself, Evan whipped the rodeo belt buckle at his face, clipping his chin. As Halbador reeled back, Evan threaded the belt through the buckle, slung the makeshift noose over his head, and ripped him off his feet. Halbador got a hand beneath the band of leather, his legs churning for traction. Evan shot a glance at the blown-out back wall, his apprehension mounting. How many steps had Renee taken toward freedom by now? 20? 30? Halbador jackhammered himself back into Evan, and they tripped over a protruding floorboard, sprawling in opposite directions. Halbador flung the belt off from around his head, but already Evan was on him, arm drawn back for the kill blow. Electricity sparked at Evan's neck, the charge knocking him off Halbador. He convulsed on the floor,